ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Scrum Down NBC Sports Rugby Podcast. I am your host with the most, Alex Corbacero, and it is great to be back, everyone. Lots to talk about, you know, not great news coming from USA Rugby and the results this Friday night. I'm sure most people listening will already know, but USA Rugby unable to secure Rugby World Cup qualification. They drew last play of the game penalty, Portugal kicked to go 16-all, USA down on points difference. They will not be in this 2023 World Cup. Really, really tough news and sending shockwaves sort of around the rugby world. We knew it was possible, consistently missing those last chance saloon options they had from Uruguay to Chile to now this repechage. It's been a tough watch. And if we look at the game, you know, Portugal, a very experienced team. Gary talked last week about, you know, the fact they've been together a long time, their consistency, their cohesiveness. And I think that showed a little bit in the game. I think USA were in control for large periods, but it wasn't pretty. It was a little bit wet. I think they went back inside their shells a little bit, went back to a bit more of a conservative model, which we saw in those sort of knockout games against Uruguay and Chile. And, you know, there'll always be question marks. What if they played a bit more? I think, you know, they relied on trying to, you know, be confrontational. There weren't many passes from the forwards in the game, which could be slightly down to the weather, but also I feel maybe a bit more of a conservative approach, where in the two first games, I did like the free-flowing rugby and the way they moved the ball. This time, a lot more conservatively. They tried to get some gains at the mall, had some success. The scrum was a bit of a mess. I think Portugal boxed very clever. I think they, you know, maybe got away with a little bit at times on a few aspects in the game, but I thought the Eagles should have managed that better. And to see Portugal at times turn the screw, you know, was tough to watch. And I just think it was a bit of an underwhelming performance. I know they were in the game. That scrum penalty right at the end was, you know, heartbreak and pretty much turned the game on its head. It's a big call from the AR, no ref there. And we haven't been able to see a replay, but definitely looks like that side goes down, a potential that David Anuhu's feet kicked out the back. But really, I think the US have got to be kicking themselves. Had lots of opportunities and just weren't able to convert enough of them. I think later in the game, finally getting a try, finally getting a little bit of control, but then just relying, you know, right to the end to that 3-point lead, and it came back to bite them. You know, you've got to credit Portugal's fight, their resilience, the emotion they played with. You saw how much it meant to them. Unfortunately, I think I would have liked to see a bit more of that from the US, but I also understand, you know, there's a lot of pressure out there. It's not an easy place to be. And, you know, my heart goes out to the Eagles, but I think on a whole, that team will be kicking themselves that they didn't get the job done there. I think they had the squad. I think they had the players. There's got to be a lot of questions asked from a high-performance review that's going to come, from a, you know, pathways to all these different reviews are going to come. And that really segues to our episode this week and our guest. We have USA Rugby CEO Ross Young on. This is a guy at the top leadership point of USA Rugby. He is going to sit down with us and maybe not talk about the on-field rugby, but what it means, the issues with the qualification, where the US Eagles, you know, have issues, what needs to be faced and addressed going forward, and a lot of other interesting stuff we talk about. This conversation actually goes on for over an hour, so we're breaking it down into two episodes. This will be the first of two. Next week's episode, we'll finish with it. But we ask him a lot of tough questions. We get through a lot here. There's a lot more to come in the following week. And make sure you stay around at the end of the pod because we have a little snippet from next week's show, which I think is worth sharing. But for now, let's get into our chat with Ross Young. And we are joined by USA Rugby CEO Ross Young. Ross, I wish we were, you know, at better times to have conversations at the moment for USA Rugby. But a big thank you for coming on. It's been a tough weekend for, I think, everyone involved or passionate about rugby in America. Before we get into a big discussion, just your quick reaction on the result in Dubai and the US not making the World Cup.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. As you said, I wish it was in better circumstances. Huge disappointment all around, but I certainly appreciate you having me on, and we can certainly talk through a few of the salient points in the next little while. But the tough times all around for sure.
And, you know, like, what does this mean for rugby in America right now? I know as we were all getting to the sort of last chance for saloon with this, I think there was a reservedness of putting too much pressure on the players or the staff who had to go out there and perform in these games. But it is, you know, a big moment. The US first World Cup since 1995, not qualifying. Back then, it was a slightly different tournament format too, where it was Argentina with a roadblock to US going to the World Cup. This in the modern game is really the first time this has ever happened. You know, what are your thoughts on that right now?
I mean, gutted. Obviously, you know, we try to put everything into the qualification process. You know, not going back over ripping up sore wounds, but from the very start and the first qualifying opportunity we had, you know, against Canada, you know, the away leg, first real kick out after COVID, and, you know, we had all sorts of issues getting people into Canada, not a great result there, but turned it round and thought we had momentum going with the win against Canada. And then, you know, the home game against Uruguay, carried that momentum in, you know, a good first half against Uruguay here in Glendale, and you know, looked lots of positives. And then, you know, unfortunately, the momentum turned, things went against us, and we ended up not winning that by game by the margin we should have done. And I think that, you know, the roll on to Chile, and, you know, same thing, you know, all sorts of issues to deal with down in Chile, and but still managed to get back there with a W in the first 25 minutes. So, you know, it seems that we've not been able to catch a break during this whole process. And, you know, not dissimilar against Portugal last Friday. We had our opportunities, you know, we had the game under control. I think the difference with Portugal was that, you know, it's a couple of 50-50 calls at the end, and things didn't go our way. We could have been there on the plane to France, but, you know, ultimately that's always going to paper over the cracks. We know we've got a huge amount of work to do in the men's 15s area, in particular on pathways, player identification, regular fixtures, calendarization, you know, that we began working on for the last 18 months. So, you know, if there is any light at the end of the tunnel, it's the fact that we, you know, that we can focus on that mid to long term plan now, instead of, you know, instead of trying to prepare as best we can, well, best we could have done with a relatively short time frame between now and France next year, is, you know, let's look to the future, and let's look to the future from now.
And, like, how big a blow do you think this is for rugby and its, you know, upward trajectory? You've had lots of positive news with the Rugby World Cup in 31 being announced. And then, you know, this is an opportunity. This World Cup would have been in a pretty friendly time zone to American viewers. It's in a place which is travelable from American fans. It is, you know, probably going to have some form of knock-on effect for this progress and this growth of this sport in America.
100%. It's, you know, the profile of the game, visibility, you know, access to high-level competition, you know, opportunities. You know, we would have, you know, had we got through the game last weekend, we would have been in with Wales, Fiji, Australia, you know, Georgia. That would have been a tough group, you know, especially given the results recently with, you know, with Georgia's win against Wales, and you know the way Fiji are going, they're, you know, they're looking stronger with the Drua program. Reaping rewards after only a couple of seasons for them. So I think it's massively disappointing. You know, there's always an opportunity with an event like a World Cup to, as you said, to raise the profile and drive things off it. But, you know, it was going to be a tough group to play in. As we said, the opportunity to improve and have a series of meaningful games between now and then would have been relatively limited. So it was going to be an uphill task with that group anyway. So I think we'd rather been there, Alex. That's what it comes down to. Yeah. You can't sugarcoat it in any way. We're not. So, you know, now we've got to look forward. You know, everyone's gutted, not least, obviously, Gary, the coaching staff, the playing staff, having spent some time with them after the game on Friday. You know, the absolute deflation, upset, angry, you know, all those different emotions flowing through that whole squad. And I think the board, the national office, all of us in the US community share that pain. We'd have loved to have been there for the opportunity to be around it, but we've got to try and pick up the pieces and try and take what positives we can out of it.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
And when you look at this result, and I agree, like, you can't fault the effort of the player and the coaches, like, but Ross, where does the accountability lie? Like, obviously you're above leadership, you're top of the leadership there with the board. We talked on some of the issues that you guys face, but like, where's the accountability for that lie? And then what are the solutions that we can actually implement to start changing this process and this situation that the US is finding themselves in?
Yeah. I mean, we've all got to take accountability for it, Alex. You know, as always, when you go through this, you know, a situation like we've been through, there's got to be soul searching. You know, we'll run that full review process. You know, for some reason, I think for all the reasons it should be, I don't want to spend too much time looking back at the what ifs, because we haven't made it now. We don't have another opportunity to qualify. Yes, I want to understand what went wrong. We all do. We all have to take a combined responsibility for it. But I really want that review process to concentrate on things we can do better, things we can put in place so that it doesn't happen again, rather than go through a finger pointing exercise. As I said earlier, you know, we all know the fact that there's a huge amount of work to do for us to be competitive, you know, in 27 and 31 to achieve those goals of pushing for quarterfinal status in a home World Cup. So, you know, let's use this as a way of picking out things that we need to change. And there has to be a collective responsibility for everyone having not qualified. And nobody's going to shirk away from that.
And it's just, you know, some of those solutions or ideas or things that you have in mind that would make a big difference. Can you share some of those for us?
It's interesting if you go back to some of the media when we were awarded the event in 31. I think, you know, I was very clear when I was spoken to, and Alan Gilpin from World Rugby was the same, is that there's lots of work gone on with the women's game in particular in calendarization and structures and more meaningful fixtures. It's a little bit easier to do on the women's side because there isn't the same traditional historical competition structures that are in place with the men's. So, you know, we're moving forward on the women's side for the hosting in 33. I think concentrating on the men's side as you want it for this particular discussion is, you know, I've been banging the table for the last few years. We've got really good traction in meetings over the last year or so, you know, and that's accelerated since the World Cup hosting. Is the single biggest thing we need to do is have more control and access to our overall squad of players. And they have to play in more meaningful competitions. You go back historically, you know, us as a men's 15s team, not knowing what games you have until 2 or 3 months beforehand in a July and a November window. You know, we saw some positivity around what was the old America's Rugby Championship, which disintegrated pre-COVID. Is how do we put that together to make more meaningful, or give us more meaningful opportunities with, in the council meetings in New Zealand around the Women's World Cup, we've sort of redesignated ourselves as a Southern Hemisphere union for a release window to build a competition structure that we'll, you know, we'll hopefully announce shortly, that aligns more with the Southern Hemisphere and the Rugby Championship window. So, you know, the Americas, the North and the South, you know, combining with the likes of Japan and Fiji and in the Asia Pacific and the other Pacific Islands, is playing a competition in that Rugby Championship window, if you like, that gives us those 4 or 5 games in that structure every year. And then, you know, really attacking and having the ability to play the teams that play currently in the European Nations Championship in the July and November windows in crossovers. So we're constantly getting challenged by teams around us in the world rankings. And then, you know, hopefully being able to pepper in more tier one or developed unions, as they're called now, opportunities within a 4-year cycle. Ultimately, if we, in doing that, you know, having the ability to centrally contract a number of players to compete in those type of competitions has to be the base for us moving forward.
Mate, I think those are all really positives, because I think you touched on there the ARC going away, you know, just massively reduce the time, the amount of tests that these players have in that environment. But if you look from the outside in, you've had the benefit of the MLR now for 4 or 5 years, which has grown player pool, grown the amount of rugby going on here. You've got, you know, an ever high amount of internationals playing in Europe. On paper, you think we should be qualified. You think things should be improving and trajectory. Like, do you think that the US has suffered because MLR coming in kind of is in that ARC window and nothing was replaced since then until maybe something like you're talking about? But is it almost like we needed that 4 years ago or 3 years ago, whenever it changed?
Yeah, you're 100% right. And I think, you know, taking your point, Alex, the America's Rugby Championship disappeared for us in Canada, but South America still played their own version of it during the whole COVID period and didn't have that dead zone. You know, the European Nations Cup got back up and running, which has been supported by a Super League in Europe. So, you know, you have each of the national governing bodies within those entities centrally contracting their players, and 80% of their squad you know, playing together and training together week in, week out. So the teams, basically the teams around us and below us have taken, you know, have had the opportunity over the last couple of years to do exactly what we haven't had the opportunity to do. And I think, you know, we've talked about, you and I have talked about, we've talked about as a community of rugby in the US for years, the issues we have around geography, you know, the cost of, you know, the cost of us getting players together for assembly is the tens of thousands of dollars before you even get a, you know, get a boot on the field. Whereas driving for an hour in smaller countries in Europe and South America don't have that issue. Now the MLR has been great in pulling people through, but again, they're all spread. And you know, that MLR will undoubtedly reap the rewards in the long term, but you know, we've got the short to midterm that we've got to look at, you know, how we can have the opportunity to have more control and access and assembly time for all of our players. I mean, people jump around about, well, look at what Japan did prior to 2019. They were shameless in the fact that they put a huge amount of money and resource in, you know, running the Sunwolves as a as almost a mirror of their national team, having them playing together week in, week out, and then, you know, playing more meaningful games in international windows and competition. We've got to look at those options.
So, you know, some of those options potentially from hearing that, is that something that, you know, SLA is potentially an option for, as you've got the MLR there, but we're hearing that there's going to be a North American side in SLA. SLA has obviously had a big benefit for a lot of the Southern South American teams who have almost made those their centralized US teams. Is that a model that US rugby or world rugby would look at to potentially try and give you that central time together with your core players, or is it too far gone with where MLR is now?
I don't think it is too far gone. I mean, look at everything the MLR has gone through in the last year or so. We've got the best relationship that we've ever had with the MLR about talking about long-term strategy and engagement. They were hugely supportive in helping, you know, obviously with their contracted players, with the camp that you helped out with here in Glendale, Alex, and, you know, and even the tour to South Africa. So, you know, the desire is there from the MLR as a group to continue to push through and generate more US players. I mean, I will always say, because I have more folk, I wish they were even stronger in having more, you know, more US players and less foreigners now. But as long as that graph goes in the right direction and the number of foreign players are reduced and we're able to integrate more US players into it, that helps. You know, we have to keep communicating with them. I think the SLA option in the short term is the easiest one to plug and play to give us the opportunity to do what we're talking about doing. I think we want to look at that initially through more of a developmental phase. You know, there were some real positives about the very young group that we took down to South America to play in the APC tournament. You know, when the more senior squad were in South Africa. You know, building that core out, getting them on the field, you know, and again, looking at contracting them early. I mean, a lot of them aren't involved. We've got, you know, you've also been involved in the academy that we've been running stroke combine for a while, Alex. There's some good young talent there that currently is not contracted to anyone. That's what I said, is it, we now have the ability to really, really look to the long term with what we're trying to do. So, yes, we've got to look at SLA. I want to make sure that whatever we try and do with games in and around a SLA competition, that we do that in conjunction with the MLR, and it can be as collaborative as possible, and we can, you know, we can do it in the most supportive way that we can, so that everyone benefits long term from it. And you know, ideally for me, SLA's been great, and SLA's been very South America focused. You know, I'd almost like, in an ideal world, to have something similar in North America that we then play off against the South Americans, rather than, so we create our own our own structures instead of just plugging something into their operating structures. So we've got a fair amount of more work to do on that. But I think as a short term and from a developmental opportunity, we're certainly looking at moving relatively quickly on giving a lot of our younger players opportunities to start playing more meaningful rugby from now.
Do you feel you will get pushback on that from the MLR? Because if you look at it, they're all trying to build sort of academies, build wider squads, invest in their area. And do you think that there'll be sort of a competition for commercial dollars, eyeballs, viewership, talent pool that could be conflicting there with the MLR? Or do you think there's a way to navigate it? Because from what I've heard, obviously the Raptors have made it sound like pretty clear that they intend to be in SLA this year. What you're talking about as a US developmental side, would that be in another additional team, almost like a Falcons team in there? Or would you be using the Raptors and Glendale as kind of the hub for that?
No, I think we have to control our own destiny, Alex, as you've said. And I think certainly for us, having the absolute control over that, our younger players is key. You saw that young development stroke academy side play the Raptors and, in a good game and ended up coming out on top of them before they went down to South America. I think, what Glendale have been doing with identifying crossover athletes has been great. And yes, we want to continue to work with them, but as we move forward, control has to be key to it. So, yes, we want to keep communicating with everyone. We want to make sure everyone's aware of what we're trying to do. We've got plenty of work on our plate to make sure that we do that, Alex. And we're not bound to one thing or another. But I think if we're going to be doing it from a developmental focus, then to me, it's important that we have, that we do have the right level of direct control over that.
So just to paraphrase, that basically means you would pick a Falcons model as such.
From the questions I posed. What we want to do is move as quickly as we can. And, I think there are a number of options we're looking at. I think to pull together any one full team from any structure now to be able to compete against SLA is going to be a heavy ask if that's going to kick off, within the first half of next year. The clock's ticking. So, we're looking at a number of options, including some broad discussions with Canada about whether or not, we look at a combined option with their younger academy group as well, just to get some playing time during this first year. So we're not completely wedded to anything, but, we want everyone to buy into what we're trying to do here, Alex, which the important thing is keeping the communication lines open, see how we can do it in the most complementary manner. But ultimately, for us as USA Rugby, we've also got to do what's best for us and the national team. And, if we end up with not everyone being 100% happy with it, then, unfortunately, that's the way it's going to have to be. Although it's certainly our intention is to be as inclusive as we can be as we run through this process.
And then, so we've kind of touched on, a little bit the calendar. So the calendar needs to be sort of redrawn up for USA to have a more, strategic model. Like you talked about, that you'd have your club season, you'd have your national season. That would create a calendar as such. Going with that has to be sort of a commercial strategy as well that can try and support some of this work that needs to be done long term. And is that an area that you guys are putting attention on, as well as putting a commercial plan in that would match these sort of calendar changes and be for the better?
Absolutely, 100%. And we've talked about getting into more detail of that public facing in the first quarter of next year, Alex. I think it comes back to those similar discussions that we talked about when we were awarded 31 and 33, is that this is really going to be a joint venture exercise with World Rugby. So, that international competition I talked about earlier, which pulls in Asia, the Asia Pacific and the Americas in that international window, if you like, in the September timeframe or the Rugby Championship timeframe. Now, that'll be a World Rugby competition. So aligning our commercial rights against what World Rugby are doing as part of this joint venture exercise we're doing with World Rugby gives us opportunity to cross-sell a little bit more and therefore increase the commercial value and put more dollars back into the central funding. So it's not going to be easy, as we know, you know, painfully through the experience of the last few years. It's a tough commercial market. COVID hasn't helped that. But I think by being hand in hand with World Rugby about this next 10-year cycle and building out more inventory, having more games in the US across the cities that have been so supportive of the World Cup bid, getting their buy-in is going to help raise profile. And you know, the more inventory we have in conjunction with World Rugby, the more opportunities we have to monetize it as well, Alex. So, yeah, they have to go hand in hand because it's, you know, as we all know, running, the more games you play, the more access you do, the more you're trying to centrally contract players, as we've talked about from a men's and women's perspective. And we're talking about increasing inventory on the women's side and trying to get towards a position whereby we can have some form of central contracting for the women as well. We need money to be able to do that. And, you know, combining with World Rugby assets, from my perspective, is certainly the way to do that moving forward.
And do you feel that, like, where you're at right now commercially, would you take ownership that maybe it's not been a good model for the US, or do you feel it was unachievable with some of the constraints that you face from, you know, rights deals with flow, which limit exposure at times, and that seems to be a crossover from the Rugby Channel, RIM, which seemed to then inherit a lot of these issues. Like, do you feel like this is a chance to finally break free and redraw it, or... like, where do you sit on how it's been up to this point? Because from the outside in, my honest opinion, like, there's definitely some criticism or, you know, issues that need to be addressed. And I do think it's honest conversations, not trying to, you know, throw people under the bus, but just saying, like, lads, we can't keep doing this anymore.
No, that comes out of the bigger picture. And, you know, as I've said previously, Alex, before my time involved, but when you look at the way everything was unraveling with the Rugby Channel and the burn that had, is, you know, Flo stood up at that time and Forward paid for, you know, that allowed us almost to keep existing at that time. So, you know, the Flo deal's in place. You know, they haven't had an easy time of it either. I think that the much bigger thing, Alex, is the fact that everyone talks about how we should be commercializing this, we should be commercializing that. But then when you turn it on its head, it comes back to what we've talked about over the last 25 minutes, is how do you commercialize anything when you don't know what inventory you've got, what games you're playing, who you're playing against, what competitions you're playing in? That's from a men's and women's perspective all round. Is, you know, we've got inside the door for a number of major corporates that, oh, well, right, tell us what we can do, and then what events have you got planned for? Well, we don't know. I mean, how are you supposed to build it and build value, you know, from a national stage perspective and almost an international stage when you don't know what structured inventory you have to be able to commercialise? That has been the biggest issue, you know, way over and above what broadcast deals that we've had in place, is we haven't had an inventory to be able to sell. So how do you put value against something that has very little tangible access for any commercial partner to activate what it's paying for? I think we're trying to position ourselves as a major international body, and we don't know what games we have. It makes that incredibly difficult. So putting the structure in place that we've said around locking in the fact that we know what games we're going to be playing moving forward from a men's and 15s perspective, from a sevens perspective, then we can build that value properly. And, you know, until we get that structure in place, we're always going to struggle with getting major commercial deals across the line.
Very fair point. But you've got to at least look and admit that I agree. Flo came in at a time of massive financial vulnerability for the union. They offered a deal that financially kept a lot of things viable. But that deal has also, from a commercial advert, even for what you do have and the exposure and the stuff you do know, having a limited TV viewing window and exposure does hurt you commercially in that aspect of trying to sell sponsorships, of trying to grow your brand, of trying to have things. Because Flo, I think Flo are a credit that they're spending money on rugby in America. I think, you know, they've bought up a lot of rights. They do a good, but they are very much like a niche platform and not sort of that wider broadcast, which I do think is important for the long-term growth. And for eventually we want new fans seeing the Eagles playing test matches. It's all part of the puzzle and the growth model going forward. And I understand maybe it's a tough position for you to comment as you have a deal with Flo, but as someone who works in broadcast and journalism, to me, that's a big part of the puzzle going forward.
Yeah, listen, of course it is, Alex, but just even saying what you're saying, how many games have been on Flo in the last 6 years?
Not enough, I'd say. No, I'd say not enough.
We're talking a handful. There's been like 6 games that we've had, that, that even with it. So whatever platform they're on, you're struggling with. And, you know, it's... we have to look at a broader strategy. And as we said, it's, if we're going to have a competition, it's going to be a world rugby competition that we're involved with. So it's their rights. So, you know, we're certainly going to have the ability to put in for, you know, as to be part of that strategy of how that's going to come across. But if that tournament around the Asia Pacific Americas is going to be the linchpin of what we're doing moving forward, along with a Pac-4 for the women in a World 15 competition for the women's side, all those are world rugby competitions that they will hold and maintain those broadcast rights for. And World Rugby are completely invested in doing what's right to maximise the opportunities for the World Cup in 31 and 33. Therefore, and to be honest, they've got more rumpf, if you like, and they've got more power to bang the table because of the bigger picture of the rights that they own as part of this. So being in partnership with them to be able to go and build an overall commercial stroke broadcast strategy for the next 10 years is important.
No, I think that's well said, mate. I do think, you know, World Rugby long-term have the financial security to look further ahead in long-term to sort of build a growth model towards 2031, which is something you guys at the union have not really had the ability to do from financial constraints and stuff like that. I think... one comment on your what you said is obviously, you know, talking about having a calendar, talking about having, you know, knowing what you're selling. Will that kind of move away from, you know, how we've had some of these, like, you know, the All Blacks game, there was supposed to be a game in Ireland, like almost like an outside company setting up these rights? Do you perceive long-term that just being more in-house and ownership and synergized with this World Rugby calendar competition to test windows going forward?
Yeah, listen, I mean, we've said all the way along is, you know, we want the biggest games possible based in international release windows so that we get access to all of our players. You know, a number of those games, all of those games that you referenced earlier have been outside of international windows. I think, you know, I wouldn't discount the opportunity of still having those, but to me, that sort of shoulder content and additional content to your main inventory, it shouldn't be, which it has been previously, as almost being the main revenue-generating opportunity that we've had, because we don't know what else has been out there. So to be able to lock one of those in when we don't know what games we're playing in November to give us something to actually sell and promote has been beneficial. So I wouldn't discount the opportunity of still having those moving forward. As you said, we want to be able to control our own destiny. More moving forward, Alex, but they have to be done in the right way and supplementary to what we're doing, not become the core of what we're trying to achieve.
That's a wrap on the first part of our chat with Ross Young. Real big credit for him to coming on, you know, asked him some tough questions. It's not an easy time to speak and he didn't have to come on, so I do really appreciate that. Maybe in hindsight, could have been a bit harder with a few follow-ups. around maybe the accountability, potentially, you know, when we talk about review, high performance stuff that's going to happen, who's doing that review, who is in charge of that? We've had repetitive cycles of failure, of issues. Is it going to be entrusted in maybe USA Rugby to do that, or should there be more involvement from outside, or how that review is going to look? But I think, Ross, we touched on a lot of good areas, especially some of the problems that USA Rugby are facing and what some of the potential solutions, what a new schedule could look like for the Eagles, the commercial viability from that schedule, I think was great insight. And then also, I think some of the stuff that's going to be talked about or will be news here is SLA and, you know, what USA Rugby's involvement with SLA was going forward, what that means for the MLR. Definitely going to be, I wouldn't say feathers ruffled, but definitely be some question marks and discussions from that. Are World Rugby USA going to carry on with SLA? How will that synergize with MLR? Because I do think there's some contrast and competing elements there, and it's going to be very interesting, especially potentially from a, you know, player wages market and what more competition and wages in there will do to the player wages. And there'll be a lot of sort of ramifications from that. Ross did say, I think they want to be on the same page with it all. You know, you hope that's the way it goes, but there's also seems to be some conflicting interest there. So stay tuned for fallout from that. But also for all of you that listened to the show and heard the teaser at the end, this was probably the one question that I wanted to get in the first episode of the show, but sillily asked at the end. But it was really about Eddie Jones and what is going on with this news story circulating about Eddie Jones being offered an 8-year deal. And just for all you diehards that listened all this way to the end of the pod, here's a little snippet and taste of Ross's answer on that. In recent day or so, the news has been circling a bit about potential Eddie Jones involvement in the USA Rugby setup. You know, there's talks of an 8-year contract going ahead. Is that a USA Rugby potential viewpoint? Is that a World Rugby, another thing that we've talked about? Someone like Eddie, I think, would have potentially a lot of upside given an 8-year runway and enough resources to enact change. Is there any truth to that, or can you comment on anything on that at the moment?
No, listen, there's no truth in that. I mean, Eddie's been very vocal. I know Eddie well. Eddie's always been vocal on the fact he'd love to get involved in a project like the US. I mean, we've got to go through our review process and we've got to make the decisions right for the program moving forward. I think the whether we decide to stick by Gary or, you know, in going through this review process, look elsewhere, I firmly believe that someone like Eddie wouldn't take this job unless there was a bunch of capability or a bunch of guarantees around player access and opportunities to work with players that we're not in a position to give anybody now, you know, whether that's Gary or Eddie. I think, you know, coaching is one thing. I think the biggest issue that we've got is far more deep-rooted than just the coaching side. So we need to make sure that we get those elements in place, and then we'll do this review process, and then we'll make the call of who that right person is to lead us forward. But no, there's certainly no truth in the fact that there's a contract there ready to be signed by Eddie for the next 8 years, that's for sure.
That is a wrap on this week's Scrum Down. Reminder, next week we'll have the second part of Ross Young's interview. We get into a lot more, lots more to talk about, debrief from pathways, the collegiate structure, other areas that need to change, where World Rugby sit in a lot of this and what their involvement going forward is. Don't miss it. From Alex Corbusier, all of us at NBC Sports, keep sharing, liking, favoring, retweeting the pod. Thanks for watching and listening. We'll see you again next week.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway. and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.